So we're in Genesis 49, okay? And I'm going to read it as we go because of the time, but it'll cover it. Basically, what Jacob does is he calls his 12 sons to him now, okay? His physical sons, and he pronounces a really prophecy slash blessing on them. Some of them are very tiny, others are quite extensive. So we're just going to go through these rapidly here, and I'll try and write these as I can find space on the wall, okay? So, number one here, Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father." Now, we could talk a lot about why he called himself Jacob and Israel, but I think he's reflecting their ultimate identity there. But Jacob gathers his sons. So, that's what he does here, okay? And notice he says, "That I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." So, there's a, it's not just blessing, it's blessing that's prophetic, if you will, okay? So prophecy and then identity. You're the sons of Jacob, you're the sons of Israel. Okay? Jacob's past, Jacob's future, Jacob's promises of God kind of summarized just in those few things. Now, Reuben here, most of these I try to give you two words that summarize what Jacob says. Some of them I just couldn't. There just wasn't enough information. But Reuben, Jacob says to Reuben, "You are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power." Okay, bearing a son is the beginning of Jacob's power, if you will, okay? But notice what he says here. "Unstable as water, you shall not excel. Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." Okay? So Reuben, he said, basically, you're unstable. And we didn't cover this. There was a couple chapters that we just skipped over because all, by the way, we the rest of the classes study this a week later. So they listen to the lesson and then they gear it to their students. So we're all studying the same thing.
Excuse me, Kevin, what does it mean by Ephraim went up to his father's couch?
What, Reuben, you mean?
Yeah, Reuben went up to his father's couch. What did he do?
He slept. Back when he slept with Bilhah, one of Jacob's wives. Yeah. Yep. And it's interesting because Jacob, if he said something, it stopped apparently. It doesn't really say anything, but he never forgot. And so that's why I say Reuben is unstable and he's immoral. And listen, this isn't to say God can't forgive. This isn't to say God cannot allow you to have impact. But Reuben apparently was still on a course of worthlessness, if you will. He's unstable and he's immoral, at least in his past. And guess what? There are times when you do something and it ruins not only the moment, it ruins your life. Okay? Because no matter what you do, Reuben was always the son who slept with his father's wife. Remember, Jacob had Leah, Zilpah, Bilhah, and Rachel, right? He slept with one of his father's, they were classified as concubines, but they're still wives, and he had two children with each of his concubines. But it's interesting, and like we'll talk about next week in verse 7 of 1 Timothy 3. There are things that ruin your reputation, and that seems to be what has happened with Reuben at the very least. But even though Reuben has to be like 60-something now? I mean, he's not 15. He's the oldest son. He's like 17 years older than Jacob. Jacob's 40-something. Okay? So he's up there. But still, sin has its consequences, and reputation, at the very least, it's hard to regain a reputation. Okay? So, and Jacob, why he didn't say anything before now, it seemed like something was said because it stopped. Nothing more happened. But he did not forget, and Reuben paid through his posterity for his sin. Do you understand that? It wasn't just Reuben that was affected by his sin. It was all of his children. They lost the blessing of God. Now listen, our sin does the same thing. Yes, to some degree or another, it impacts those around us to some degree, and even our posterity to some degree. All right? It takes a while to get out from under that. Now this is an extreme example, but I follow genealogy some, and there's a show on TV. I watch it on the internet because I don't get cable or whatever. But it's Who Do You Think You Are? And somebody, I don't even remember who it was because I'm not a big celebrity follower, but I like the process of discovery. But somebody was new or was connected to John Wilkes Booth. Now, John Wilkes Booth, who was he? Well, he was an actor, and he fought in the Civil War and all. You just remember one thing, right? It's kind of hard. No one wants to be related to John Wilkes Booth. Now, you can't change your relatives, but I'm saying, why is it? Because, you're from him, right? It's maybe that kind of idea, just the stain of sin that even though they didn't commit it, they're stained by it to some degree or another, okay? So it does make it hard. But unstable and immoral are the two words that I describe for him. And you shall not excel. And I'll just stick that up here. He said you won't excel. Reuben, you would think one of the big tribes was going to be Reuben because he's the oldest. No. So he didn't excel. Okay, Simeon and Levi. They took them together for some reason. The only two that they took as a pair. Instruments of cruelty in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. What does he say about them? He calls them cruel and angry and what's going to happen to them? And I'll just tell you, I won't write them up here. Well, I probably better write them up there. He will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. What's going to happen to Simeon? Divide and scatter. What's going to happen to them? They'll lose their identity amongst the other tribes. Now, why is he saying they're cruel and angry? What do we do?
Well, there are two sons of Jacob that are sinning because they raped Hillel or one of Jacob's daughters, and they had them all circumcised themselves, and when they were, men were all circumcised, they took their swords and went to the city and murdered everybody in the whole city.
Did you catch that? That was Simeon and Levi. Did you catch what Maurice said? Dinah, we don't know if she was raped, but she was defiled. The one of the key leader sons of the town was immoral with Dinah, and they took revenge. They tricked him and said, "You get circumcised and we'll become one people." Well, all the men were circumcised and they were sore on the third day, and they went in and literally killed all the males of the town. Okay? Basically wiped out this whole group of people. And Jacob didn't forget that either. And he basically said they would lose their identity in the midst of all of the other tribes of Israel. Okay? So not a good picture that's there. We didn't cover that either. We just mentioned a little bit because we didn't want the kids to cover that in detail.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. There's no kids in. Now we're talking about the other classes. So when we did cover this, we didn't cover that in detail because we didn't want a whole lesson on that for the kids. So we did bring it up, but we didn't cover it in detail. But that idea, there was a lot of sinful reaction and tragedy. It wasn't like all was going well with Jacob as time went on here. Now the next one here, and you can see by size, I think Judah and Joseph are the big ones, okay? Here's Judah. You are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hands shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth are whiter than milk. Now this is a surprise, because who's kind of like the thug of the family? And you can go back to this. Who sold Joseph? It was Judah. From a human standpoint, Judah didn't have a lot to go on. He didn't have a good record, right? Remember, Reuben was off and he came back, and where's Joseph? And they had already sold him, right? Reuben wasn't right there. Reuben sought to deliver his brother back to his father, it says. Judah sold him, but then Judah was kind of the one that led things after that. He was the one that said, if we don't come back, his blood be on me, right? He kind of took the lead. And so it appears, at least from Jacob's vantage point, that Judah has rectified what he broke. You can't get back 20 years of a person's life, but he had made amends at least to his father. But this has nothing to do with that per se, because he's telling about the future. What's going to happen to Judah, the tribe of Judah?
Would Jacob have known that it was Judah that did that?
I think that it would have come out. It doesn't say anywhere, but it seems like it's knowledge between them as they talk as brothers. So I'm only guessing, but when they show up with all of the trailers to pick up their father to say Joseph is alive, there's a little bit of explaining going on. But I don't know for sure. Because this is ultimately inspired by God, and I don't say that lightly, this is God speaking through Jacob in a sense. God knows too. So, but that's a good point. It is. So anyway, what's interesting is Judah is, I call him victorious. Victorious and regal, or royal if you prefer. The scepter will not depart from Judah. This is a side note, but my wife and I talk about this some. It's like, why does God let people marry four wives? It just isn't good. You know, it just doesn't help the conversation. Okay? It doesn't help people have multiple wives back then or whatever. Well, God acknowledged that. That's what happened. But that isn't the way He originated marriage, and that's not what marriage is all about. But it's interesting that all of the important people that end up doing things long term come from Leah. Judah, for example, Levi. Okay, the others, you know, you didn't need the other wives' children to accomplish God's plan, if that makes sense. They're still told 12 tribes, God honors them, but the significant ones came from Leah. And we'll see here in a minute, hopefully, what Jacob says about his marriage too, because I think he acknowledges some things here. Let me just read these. If you need them after class, I'll give them to you, but because of time, they're actually quotes out of the passage here. But who your brothers shall praise, that's a prophecy. It sounded like Joseph, really, almost. Remember the bowing down type thing? Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. The scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes. I don't remember what Shiloh means. Is it peace? But the idea of Jesus, the Messiah, comes. And that's the idea. Judah becomes the messianic tribe from which Jesus comes. Okay? So this is like, if you will, another prophecy about what will happen in Judah. Judah will be the regal tribe from which kings come and ultimately from which the Messiah comes. Pardon me? Judah.
Oh, Judah.
Judah, yeah.
Leah, isn't that where Mount Moses came from, Leah?
Nope. Jacob's six sons came from Leah, and also his daughter Dinah was Leah's. Okay, verse 13. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall join Sidon. What's interesting, they haven't even got the land. This is 400 years before they take over, go back to Canaan. And he's already saying that Zebulun will have a certain part of land and where he'll be located. Which is interesting because they don't really say that about anybody else. Okay? And I just put this down. He shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon, which is the north of Israel there. So I just put sea haven because I didn't really know what else. That isn't really a great description, but it's what they do, and there'll be a haven for ships, but it doesn't really say it beyond there. So it's really weird that they talk about what they will do and all of that, which they don't necessarily do with others. Issachar is a strong donkey lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. So number six, there's no writing for number five on the main point. But at least as I understand it here, he's lazy and selfish. He liked the comforts of life, and eventually people enslaved him because he wouldn't get up and work like he should. He spent all his time doing what he wanted to do rather than what he should do. So he became a band of slaves. Okay? And again, these seem so random. He just talked about Zebulun, where he would be, and that he was going to be a haven for ships. And then here's someone else that's going to basically become people's slaves because he's lazy and selfish. He liked the good life, but the good life wastes your life. Okay? You don't get wages when you're out spending them rather than earning them, for example. Yeah. Hagar?
Hagar, yeah, that's where the Islamic and Muslim religion came.
Well, yeah. Yeah, there's more to the Muslims and Islams than Hagar, but they certainly had a good start there.
But the thing is, when they go, it's so stupid. You can't make friends with Palestinians and the enemy. It's warned about all of your Deuteronomy, the Old Testament, and everything.
There's a lot of things that God does bless, though. God blesses Edom, which is the descendants of Esau, for example, later on. So, and they would probably be in that group too. Okay, number 7. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path, that bites the horse's heels so that its rider shall fall backward. I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. Now this one is open to question here. Because I don't know if this is good or bad. Okay? If Dan is like a serpent in the way, if the way is your enemies, that's a good thing. If you can cause the rider of a horse for your enemies to fall back, that's a good thing. If you're like the normal snake that we think of, that you're riding your horse and he's a problem and he's a danger, and that's kind of the way I took it, he's judging. He says he judges people, which is a good thing, but he's also going to be dangerous. So he's judging and dangerous, and you'll have to decide who he's dangerous to, I guess. But the strange thing is, it seems to be a positive thing by what Jacob says. He says, I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. That doesn't seem to fit at all. And maybe he sees what's going to happen to Dan, not good, in the book of Judges. There's different things that happen. But he'll judge his people, and I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. I really don't know why the contrast there. And I'm just being honest. I don't want to tell you more than I know. Okay? But it doesn't seem to leave it good. So then, I have waited for your salvation, O Lord, seems to be because of what will be happening to Dan or something. Like, God, we need your help. Okay? Number 19, or verse 19, Gad doesn't say much. Gad means troop, right? A troop shall tramp upon him, but she shall triumph at last. So I say, trampled and triumphed, okay? So he's trampled. He's a troop. His mom named him that because they're having a bunch of boys, and a troop comes, right? There's a lot of boys coming, so like it's today they say, yeah, you got a football team, you know? But trampled, he's initially trampled, but he'll turn around and become triumphant. That's all that's said about them. Okay, so it's interesting, but it says little, says a lot. Asher, it looks like I have it blank here. I didn't finish it. What would you say here? He's not rich. No, read it again. Read it. His bread will be rich. So he's not talking about his money. He's talking about his what? Not even his crop. Keep looking on. Read on. He shall yield royal what? What do we call this? No, we're talking food here. Yeah. Bread and donuts. Let's put that. Let's say bread and donuts. He seems to be good at baking things. Okay? And again, there's Zebulun in the sea haven kind of idea. There's, you know, someone will be trampled, someone else will become a slave, and oh, you're going to be Israel's top chef. Kind of idea. That's what they'll be known for. Their bread is rich. And royal, and she'll yield dainties. And you might think, Kevin, how can this be so random? Well, wait till you see the next one. I mean, you think, well, it can't be that. There has to be some deeper meaning. Well, look at Naphtali here. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. Really? That's all you say about Naphtali? What is he? Now, this is, what's a deer let loose?
In my garden.
A pest here, but I don't think that's what they're talking about here. But that's a good point. He's graceful, right? So I don't know if that's physical or if it relates to the next part, because some people are just more, I don't know, athletic, or they move with such, you know, just handle themselves. I read somewhere it was that there's seven different types of intelligence, and one is like body intelligence. You're able to, you know, use your body well.
Yeah,
you're coordinated.
Ears are also good for food.
Yes, I have. But this is a deer let loose, not a deer in the pot. Okay, so we're not talking about food here. Somebody's graceful and creative is what I call. He's good with words. Okay, he uses beautiful words. Yeah, maybe eloquence a good thing, but, you know, it's something about, you know, some people just hack out their words, and some people are just really good with words. And that's what they were going to be known for. Interesting. And again, what a random range of things, right? Now flip your page over here. I just outlined it because there's so much here. I didn't even try to fill in or make notes. But just I'll read it and you can kind of catch what he's being told. Joseph is a fruitful bow. A fruitful bow by a, some of you might say bow, depending on where you're from. By a well, his branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him and hated him, but his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb, the blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. So he brings up again what happened to Joseph, seemingly like almost in a poetic form. The archers, I think, were his brothers. Okay. He spent 13 years before he was promoted. Yeah, to Pharaoh's son. Yep. He served for Potiphar and in prison, and those two were about 13 years. So anyway, he's fruitful and blessed. Okay? And I think what this has to do with is physical posterity primarily, because again, Manasseh and Ephraim together, Jacob said, hey, don't worry about it. Even though I blessed Ephraim over Manasseh, people are going to say, may you be like Ephraim and Manasseh. May you have that many children. May you be that abundant. So it has to do with his posterity. He would have a lot of descendants, okay? And so he really lays on the blessing on Joseph. So fruitful and blessed. And I've kind of outlined it there a little bit, but God was with you anyway, and you will be blessed with great posterity, great number of descendants. Number 27, last one here for the sons. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. It doesn't sound like Benjamin is good. Devouring and dividing. Is that what I have? Yeah. So not good things for Benjamin either, though Benjamin does end up being the tribe that Saul comes from, the first king, right? First king of all of Israel. There's lots of kings before then in different pieces or whatever, but devouring and dividing. So Benjamin, not good stuff there either. He sounds like the spoiled last child, kind of, almost. Okay? Not this Ben. Okay? Here's the summary here. Then we have a little more. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them, and he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. So some got a lot of things said about him, others almost just like an acknowledgement. You know, well, you're good cooking. and we'll move on. You know. So that's the 12. And the two that you really see that are emphasized are Joseph and Judah. Okay, for different reasons. Now, verse 29. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Jacob's talking to his 12 sons now. I'm to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. I outlined it again for the sake of speed. Where does he want to be buried? In the cave, right? In Canaan. The Canaan cave. That's what I'll call it. He describes it for different things. Abraham bought it when Sarah died. So, who's buried there? Abraham and Sarah, right? Who else? Isaac. Sorry about the bleed through here. And Rebecca. And there's Leah. Isn't that interesting? Who's not buried there? Rachel is not buried there. What is Jacob doing here? What has he done? Was she the number one spouse? Yes. She was his legitimate first wife. Even though he loved Rachel, and they each were competing to try to see who could have more children to get his blessing or his, favor. But this to me, and you can think I'm reading into this, but he acknowledged her as his legitimate wife. The first wife, the rightful wife. Even though he was connived, he did not have to marry Rachel. He did not have to marry Zilpah. He did not have to marry Bilhah. Okay, so to me, that is one way he acknowledges what marriage is all about. Okay, Rachel he buried along the way, whatever. And same with, I don't know where he buried Zilpah and Bilhah. And you might think I'm reading more into it. I don't think so, because he didn't bury all his wives there. He buried his first wife, his rightful wife there. And we also mentioned that all that God wanted to accomplish by the sons of Jacob were accomplished in the sons of Leah. So we say, what if Jacob didn't marry the others and have the others? It would not have changed God's program at all. He wouldn't have had the 12 tribes. He would have had the 6, or maybe she would have had 12 kids. Who knows, right? And all it does is God works through sinful man to accomplish his work. That's what you can say. Okay? It doesn't justify that. It simply acknowledges that. We don't want to disparage singleness, for sure. But God's normal plan is marriage. That doesn't mean everyone will get married. It doesn't mean that everyone that gets married will even have children. That's up to God, right? But the last thing I want to talk about here is Jacob dies. And that's not really my point. It says, when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, now this is what I want to highlight here. He drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. By the way, isn't that the way you want to die? I do. You know, just want to hang, just, I'm leaving. I just want to talk one final time, and I'm going to crawl in my bed and die. You know, it isn't always that way, but he just died from being old, I guess. But the phrase I want to get to here is he was gathered to his people. What does that mean? What is the significance of that? No, he was gathered to his people. Yeah, which indicates what? They're still around. There's life after death. There's a resurrection, but if you get that idea, death, life does not exist, does not end at death. In fact, Jesus talks about, he actually brings this up because God says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And his point was, present tense, God is not the God of the dead, he's the God of the what? Living, and they have been dead for a long time. It, in some way, shape, or form, they're still alive. So it's indicative of life after death. He's gathered to his people. Okay? Now, where you spend eternity is one thing, but everyone is an eternal being. You either spend it eternity with God or eternity away from God, right? Away from God, from the glory of His presence in the lake of fire. So that's indicative there too as well. So, all right. We have one more lesson in Genesis, and then, like I said, the rest of the classes are a week behind us. And then we're probably going to take a break before we cross the Red Sea. Okay, go into Exodus. We'll see, but we might study some Christmas related stuff like we've done before in the Sunday school class. Okay, very good. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word. I thank you for the life of Jacob and how you, in all transparency, showed us his life, his troubles, his struggles, even the challenges he had with his children. Lord, and now at the end of his life, he acknowledges you in the way he blesses his children, his sons. And Lord, we see lots of principles here where sin does have impact. Lord, that you can do great things through terrible tragedies like Joseph being sold into Egypt. You can accomplish great things through that. And Lord, ultimately, we serve the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we do honor you as that eternal God that worked in the lives of these men to ultimately bring salvation to us. And we just thank you for it. We look forward to the final chapter in Genesis next week and how Joseph just kind of wraps it all up and brings us back into the scope that you are the God that is in control of everything. And help us to just walk in that as we seek to serve you and live for you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.